Christmas Eve programmes on Radio 4. And now it's time for The Birkis Way.
From the outer reaches of the universe, they had come. From the very edge, where space curves back upon itself and time ceases to be. For eons they had traveled on their quest. They had come past the mysterious quasars of the Crab Nebula, unrelenting in its sinister pulsations. They had come past the collapsing molecules of the neutron stars, where mass caves infinitely inwards. They had come past the cavernous black holes, unassuaging in their eternal appetite for matter in their wake. Two beings, one of whose wife had just been to the West Indies. Jamaica the first had inquired. No, she had gone.
That's enough of that. Go on, out you go. That's the last time we ever have Arthur C. Clarke on Does the Team Think? Watch your mates. Just another one of the Christmas clips from the Christmas shows coming your way this Christmas on the BBC at Christmas. Stay tuned this Christmas to this special Christmas edition of the Christmas Birkis Way to Dynamic Christmas Living, featuring Joe Kendall, Nigel Rees, Chris Emmett, Father Christmas and Fred Harris, as we Christmasly present our Christmasingly Christmassy 8 correspondence course, Plan Christmas Schedules the Birkis Way.
Well, as you may have noticed, it's Christmas. As you can see, we've decorated the program with fancy paper, tinsel and holly leaves, and I think it looks rather nice.
I think it was overdoing it a bit, though, sticking a fairy on the opening announcement.
Oh, get Butch Box.
Well, it all serves a purpose, because this week our course is all about gearing your TV and radio programs to the festive season. How to plan Christmas schedules the Birkis way.
Now, it's necessary to devote some time to serious consideration about what programs to put on. 10 seconds is about average in national broadcasting companies. But you must think very carefully in case you contravene the rules of the charter. In ITV, of course, this can't happen.
No, in ITV, it's absolutely impossible to think carefully. Let's just show you the kind of thing we mean.
Christmas on television. A selection of all your favorite and most popular programs, plus Sale of the Century.
Well, let's get straight on with the rundown. And after that, the even more rundown, followed by the tired and stale, and then the pathetic and extremely tedious. Starting with, at 6 o'clock, Christmas Crossroads.
The story so far. Amy Amnesia, the desk duster, has taken a tray of tea and biscuits into Meg Variety Awards study, little knowing that Sandy Monotone is already there with a tray of tea and biscuits brought in by David Love Interest and Vera Canalboat, who are secretly having a tray of tea and biscuits together on the quiet. In tonight's special Christmas episode, the story takes an unexpected turn as Diane, you must be joking, suddenly arrives at the motel with a tray of tea and mince pies, throwing the entire plot into total confusion.
Yes, this is followed at 7 o'clock by more seasonal japes when the Christmas tree gets stuck in the lavatory and everybody's knickers fall down during the Christmas dinner. Then after World in Action, it's time for The Best of Huey Green at 8 o'clock.
And at 2 minutes past, we present The Best of Television Comedy, featuring Hilda Baker in Not On Your Malapropism, and excerpts from Yas Governor, It Ain't Off Bloomin' Freezin' Pop, and What a Flamin' Not Off for Holiday, E and Mrs. Adwithim, Enry, recently recently acclaimed by the press as the show with the most apostrophes of 1976.
Yes, just some of the delights coming your way this Christmas on British television.
Planning Christmas schedules the Birkis way can be less painful.
Remember that Professor Emil Birkis doesn't like to overdo things. Now, when you go to parties, just pull one cracker. And if you're careful, you can make her last all Christmas. The same applies to your broadcasting schedule. Begin the day with a nice, sincere, touching little program that all the children will enjoy. Then after that, try a program like this.
Hello, and welcome to the Royal Children's Christmas Morning Hospital for the incurably heartwarming, where I'm going to meet some children who are forced to spend Christmas Day suffering from acute sickly sentimentality and an advanced case of tugged heartstrings. Now, first, let me see who's in this bed. Hello? What's your name?
Pardon?
Very good, yes. What is your name, Sonny?
Eric Poe de Croydon, mate.
Yes. And how old are you, eh?
53.
Isn't that adorable? Now, tell me, what are you in here for, Mr. Croydon?
I came in to have my operation.
Yes. And what did they do?
Well, one of the doctors took my appendix out.
Yes.
Then he took my tonsils out.
The tonsils?
Yeah.
Yes.
Then he took my small intestines out.
You see, and finally?
Well, he eloped with my kidneys, didn't he?
Just a little joke we rehearsed there. Now, tell us, seriously, though, if I can be serious for a moment, wouldn't you rather be home with your family enjoying your Christmas dinner?
Oh, no. We can't afford a turkey. We had to find something else to fatten up.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, I've been force-feeding a sausage for 6 months.
He's a panic, isn't he? Now, tell me, Mr. Croydon, did you hang up your sock on the bedpost last night, did you?
My sock, yes.
Yes,
yes.
And what did you get?
Asphyxiated.
What would you do with him, eh? Well, now, boys and girls, if you'd all just look over towards that door now. Who's this great fat figure with the red cheeks and the bushy white beard coming in?
It's Matron, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, because we've got a nice little surprise for you all now, you see, to liven up your Christmas for you. Does everybody like sea lions?
Oh, yes.
Jolly good, jolly good. Well, just hold out your plates, then.
Oh, yeah.
Go at this plate for everybody. You'll all get a flipper. Who wants some Brussels sprouts? Anybody want stuffing?
Yes, please.
Here is an important warning. The item which you have just heard was not suitable for people of a nervous disposition, or anyone else. It was, in fact, a prime example of the sort of show one should avoid scheduling for Christmas morning.
Good fillers for Christmas afternoon viewing are The Queen's Speech and A Dreary Old Film. But be sure to announce them properly so people know which is which. All details of your Christmas programme should be sent well in advance to the Radio Times so that it can ignore them properly.
The complaint has, of course, been made in the past that Radio Times is out of touch with the modern viewer's tastes. Well, here to answer that is the man who operates the electron microscope that lays out the radio pages. Sir Gordon Dull. Oh, Sir Gordon, really? Some people say your magazine has a great tendency to spout highbrow journalism.
Utter rubbish.
You mean it hasn't a tendency to spout highbrow journalism?
No, it has a tendency to utter rubbish.
I see. What do you say to the criticism that it is in fact boring?
Well, this depends on the subjective nature of one's viewpoint, and personally, I'm of
yes.
the opinion that...
Well, while Sir Gordon is answering that, we're just going to nail him into a wooden box here and drop him in the sea, just beyond the safe side. Sir Gordon, thank you, and good luck with the sharks.
And talking of ITV, let's take a look now at the typical little family interest story which has become so much a part of our Christmas viewing these days.
Good morning. I wonder
get
if...
Get out!
Could...
Go on, get out!
Look, I beg your pardon.
You heard me. Go on, get out. Damn bell salesman. Fifth today.
Ah, good morning. Is this the pet shop?
If we were on television, you wouldn't need to say that.
I beg your pardon.
Nothing. Can I help you?
Yes. I'm after a Christmas present for my nephew. I thought I'd buy him a puppy.
Oh, puppy, eh? Well, you're in luck there. We've just got one squid left. Now, I think if
pardon?
I'll show you... We've just got one squid left.
No, I wanted a puppy.
It's all right. It's only a puppy. It's very playful. Look. Down, boy. Down, boy.
No.
You see?
No, I want a puppy. I mean, you can teach a puppy to fetch things.
Well, you can teach a squid to sting you.
Sting you? Where's the fun in it stinging you?
Squids always seem to enjoy it.
No. It's got to be a dog.
Oh, all right. A dog. I think I've got a dog here somewhere. Just 1 minute, madam. There we are. You're in luck. Your very own little puppy dog.
That's not a puppy dog.
What is it then?
Oh, it's a squid with two floppy ears sellotaped to its head.
That's a dog, all right.
Well, what are those 8 tentacles doing on it then?
Well, been doctored.
If it's a dog, why is it in a tank of water?
Didn't house trained yet.
Now, look here.
All right. I will admit it is a foreign model. In Japan, they prefer their dogs a bit less canine. They go more for dogs that are a bit squid-like.
I told you, that's a squid, not a dog, and I'm not buying it now, then.
What have you got against squids?
I want a dog. You can take a dog for a walk in the park.
Well, you can take a squid for a walk in the park. Except for the park bit. My wife takes it for a walk every night.
Where?
In the canal.
How does she breathe?
It's quite near the park.
How does she breathe? Now answer that. How does she breathe?
She's a haddock.
You're not married to a haddock.
All right. I admit it. No, I'm not. We're living in sin.
Oh.
Now, look, this is a beautiful beast. I'd love to own a squid like this.
Well, you do own it. What are you worried about? No, I'm not having that squid.
I've got another one out the back.
No. Look, don't you have any other ordinary pets here?
Oh, yes. Just look around the shelves. We've got all sorts.
No, you haven't. There's no animals on these shelves at all. You're playing a record entitled Pet Shop Atmosphere. This isn't a proper pet shop at all, is it?
Well, not in the verbal sense of the word, no. Look, you sure you don't want a squid?
Of course I'm sure. What would my nephew want with a squid?
All right. I have got a dog here. Just the one, a real puppy dog. I'll just wrap it in gift paper and send it off for you. Could I have your nephew's name, please?
Certainly. It's Mr. Jack Cousteau, 2,000 Fathoms, the Galapagos Islands.
Copies of that exercise can be obtained from Berkey's Publications of Stepney, priced at a couple of squid. Quit.
Back to program planning, and you should by now have planned your schedules up to John Rickman's 9th non-starter in the Boxing Day Sports Roundup.
And because Boxing Day is such a typically British institution, it's as well to balance your shows for the evening accordingly, as this Berkey's tape demonstrates.
Programs tonight on BBC One. At 6:35, more exciting detective action with Schultz, New York's fat, bald police chief, doomed to live the rest of his tragic life in a wheelchair because he's too lazy to walk. The man who solves crimes in his own inimitable way, very badly. That's followed at 7:10 by O'Reilly,
Chicago's thin, scruffy, hard-talking, bald police chief with a heart of gold, a liver of nylon, two plastic hips, and reinforced concrete small intestines. Doomed to spend the rest of his life on Who Do You Do? Then it's another thrilling episode of Spassky and Flynn. Cincinnati's tall, midget, one-legged, deaf, gay, Christian scientist, colorblind, amnesiac, Jesuit, bald police chiefs, though not necessarily in that order, doomed to spend the rest of their lives in repetitive plots shooting at people for no apparent reason. But now on BBC One, it's time for the start of a new series. The adventures of San Francisco's bald police chief, run over by a steamroller, and doomed to spend the rest of his life completely dead. We present A Stiff Called Ironside.
Okay, boys, put it down over here.
Hey, you can't put that carpet down in the street.
It's Chief Ironside, lady.
Well, can't he step on the sidewalk like everybody else?
No, that's no carpet, lady. That is Chief Ironside. He had an accident with a steamroller. It was a tragic day for this city.
What do you mean?
Well, the road had just been resurfaced. Is this your apartment the hoods are holed up in?
Sure. Can you get them out?
Well, sure, try, lady. Chief, what do you think we should do? Check, Chief. You're absolutely dead.
Okay, Paderewski. We know you're in there. Come on out. We got irons, and we're not afraid to use them. Paderewski, we know you're in there. Paderewski, look. We're pretty sure you're in there. Paderewski. We think you might just conceivably be in there. Paderewski, we reckon you ain't in there at all. You lousy stinking bum, what kind of trick is that to pull?
You can't get in, Chump. All the doors are locked.
He's in there.
That's what you think, Paderewski. We're coming in.
Are you sure it's safe?
You're right, lady. Murphy, I guess you better give the chief an iron.
Check, Lieutenant.
Yeah, that's better. The creases have gone now.
Right, Paderewski. The chief's coming in.
Slip him under the door, boys. Okay, boys, book him.
That was the most daring thing I ever saw. I'd kind of like to repay the chief for what he did. You know, Lieutenant, take him out to dinner, maybe. Where can I contact him?
You'll find him in the phone book, lady.
Really?
Sure, yeah. Between pages 156 and 157. Okay, boys, fold him up. Easy does it now. Let me go.
Well, by now we're into the late evening viewing slot, and so it's possible
Hello.
To proceed Hello. With
Hello? Hello?
Excuse me a moment. What is it?
Hello. Is that the Burkis way to dynamic living of Stepney? Callers, welcome.
Yes?
I'd like to complain about my course. You said you'd rid me of my speech impediment in just 2 weeks. That was 8 months ago. I want my money back.
Forgive me, sir, but I don't see what you're complaining about. Your voice sounds perfectly all right to me.
Well, it's not. Are you going to give me my money back or not?
Certainly not.
In that case, I shall go elsewhere and see if they can stop me sounding as if I was on the telephone all the while.
Well, sorry about that interruption. As I was saying, now that we're into the late evening, you can put on one of those strange, incomprehensible plays.
Like this one, perhaps.
Tickets, please. Tickets, please. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much. Fine, thank you. Tickets, please. Ta. Thank you. Ta. Thank you.
Excuse me?
Tickets, please. That's it, sir. Thank you. Tickets, sir.
Excuse me. There's only me in this compartment.
I am well aware of that, sir, but I have got a job to do. Move aside, please. Tickets, please. Tickets, sir. Thank you. Tickets, please.
Look, I don't seem to have a ticket, I'm afraid.
Tickets, please. Tickets, sir. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, madam. Sir, would you mind repeating that, please?
Certainly, yes. Tickets, please. Thank you, sir. Thank you, tar. Thank you, tar.
Thank you. Now then, no ticket, eh?
No.
I see, sir. In that case, I'm afraid I shall have to shoot you.
Shoot me?
All right, sir. All in good time. All in good time. Now then, where did I put my gun?
Let's not be hasty about this. I was under the impression the penalty for not having a ticket was a fine of not more than £25.
Oh, not anymore, sir. You see, yesterday I gave an old age pensioner 30 lashes across the back, you see, sir? And she had a perfectly valid ticket.
What was the offence, then?
Not smoking in a smoking compartment. So, you see, if I gave her 30 lashes, it stands to reason I've got to shoot you. Otherwise, the whole thing would be out of proportion with me.
So you're going to shoot me immediately?
No, I can grant you a stay of execution for the length of time it takes this train to pass through East Croydon.
How long is that?
Oh, about 3.5 hours, sir. Now, as a condemned man, you're entitled to one last meal from the buffet.
Oh, well, perhaps just a sandwich, a cup of tea, and a slice of fruit cake.
Oh, come on. Remember where you are, sir.
Yes. I mean, I'll have 2 bits of baby's blanket filled with chopped polystyrene, a cup of soggy iron filings, and a slice of damp hardboard.
I'm sorry, sir. It's off.
I know what you are. You're a sadist, aren't you? It's the thought of power. It makes you into a sadist.
The thought of power does not make me into a sadist, sir.
No?
No. It's the black leather underwear that makes me into a sadist. Now then, before I shoot you, I shall have to take your name and address.
I'm not giving you my name.
All right, then I'll just take the dress.
No.
Please.
No.
Very well. I don't enjoy shooting passengers, you know. Well, only a bit. But I can see I've got no alternative.
Oh, wait a minute. Look. Here's 500 quid in used notes. There. Look, now will you spare my life?
Oh, well, thank you very much, sir. Yes, well, I think in that case we can forget about the whole thing, don't you?
Oh, yes. Just a minute. Hang on. I think I've just been conned. You've conned me, haven't you?
Nonsense, sir. Whatever makes you think that?
Well, for a start, I...
Is the ticket collector in here? Ah, you're wanted in the next car.
Right, I'll come straight away and I'll deal with you later.
And so we reach the end of our course on planning your Christmas schedules the Berkis way. If you've organized the programs with due regard for timing, balance, and good, sound, mature entertainment, you'll never make a television controller.
We're sorry to interrupt this program, but we're going over to the BBC newsroom now for a newsflash.
Gerald Beaverstone, the film actor, is dead. And has been for 26 years. This is the end of this newsflash.
And finally, to wind up our course for you today, let's turn to a variety show that can teach us rather a lot of things about program planning. It's, of course, purely an isolated example, and the more isolated, the better.
Yes, it's Celebrity Morons, the fun-packed noughts and crosses game where a famous celebrated celebrity sits in each square and delivers agonizingly rib-tickling ad-libs every time he or she is asked a question. All the contestants have to do is to say whether the celeb's excruciatingly mirth-giving off-the-cuffer is true or false. And now, without more ado, let's meet our host for the show, Bob Wisecrack.
And as the hippie said when his friend asked, "How are you?" "Hi." Well, our first contestant tonight is Mrs. Agnes Boring. And Agnes, as the actor said to the actress in Oh, Calcutta, "Nice to have you on the show." Agnes, do you live in London?
No.
What do you do in it then? Seriously, where do you live?
I live in Barnsley.
Yes, I know someone who wants to move as well. Barnsley, that's outside Reading, isn't it?
No.
Well, what is it then, inside Reading? Well, over here is Mr. Les Ordinary of Catford. Tell us a bit about yourself, Les.
Well, I'm a bilger, putting hemispherical roofs on toilets. And last week I accidentally hit an Irish salesman selling odds and ends.
Really? Sounds like a knick-knack paddywhack, give a bog a dome.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Well, as the... As the grouse shooter said to the stripper, let's get on with the game. Because it's time now to play Celebrity Morons. And Agnes, you go first.
Arthur Badactor, please.
Arthur Badactor, down in the bottom corner there. Arthur, Sir Gerald Fitz Innuendo was the first person to do it with a broom handle while leaning over backwards in his lady's boudoir in 1573. What did he do?
Usher Fink, he did himself an injury. I believe he crossed the Atlantic in a plane.
I agree.
You're wrong to agree. In 1573, he was the first person to use that last joke. So, no money on that square. Les?
Pat Stooge, please.
Pat, nice to see you on the show, Pat. In birds, Paddy, what is the difference between a red breast and a blue tit?
Cyril Smith's knickers.
I think you've turned over two pages, Paddy.
John Inman does when he's on top of a Christmas tree. It's another name for an incontinent owl. False. They drop off in the autumn.
I think we'd better come back to you on that one, Pat. Agnes, your turn again.
The Labour Cabinet, please.
The Labour Cabinet, up there in the top corner. Welcome to the show, all of you. What's the difference between a socialist government and a sweet shop?
Yes. I should think they both find things get very sticky.
Thank you, Jim. Well, Agnes?
I agree.
You're wrong to agree. The difference between a sweet shop and a socialist government is one issues the fudge and the other fudges the issues. Well, with the score neck and neck at zero each, who's won? We've got a draw between Agnes and Les and a draw between Les and Agnes. What's the result? I think we'd better ask the audience.
Oh, you think it's a pair of drawers?
Well, as my wife says to me every Saturday night, that's it for another week. Bye!
Well, there's no need to ruin your Christmas watching television when the Birkitt's way is around. Switch on the radio and ruin your Christmas instead with Joe Kendall, Nigel Reese, Chris Emmett, and Fred Harris. You too could write scripts for Christmas crackers like Andrew Marshall and David Renwick, or for additional crackers like Colin Bostock Smith. All you need is a little festive spirit as drunk by producer Simon Brett of Stepney. See you next week, everyone, and merry dynamic living.